Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6'9" tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name, you will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey everybody, welcome in. Let's get it on. It's David Summers, and here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring and back into time as we get wall-to-wall and tree-top tall with the Tennessee stud, Ron Fuller. Okay, so Ron, here in Southeast Alabama, we woke up to 72 degrees. You were just telling me you woke up in the Knoxville vicinity to 55 degrees.
That's it, man. I mean, that's the difference in being here and not being there.
How can you live with yourself?
I find it pretty easy, to be honest with you, man. After being in Florida for a lot of years.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, I understand that when you're down there. Central Florida, y'all had those pop-up thunderstorms almost every day and plenty of heat to go with that. We had the weatherman on last night, fairly new guy, and he said, well, you might need a jacket tomorrow morning. I'm thinking, 72, where are you from, guy? So I don't know. I laughed at that, but... And went out in the backyard this morning, and I was like, you know, it feels good, but no, there ain't going to be no jackets here for a little while. But hey, we wish we were at 55 degrees. Okay, I tell you what, every week, Ron, it's amazing. It continues to happen. Your audience grows, but last week it really exploded. You more than doubled a week's worth of normal audience in the first day after release of Studcast number 361. This one is number 362. So it's now become by far the biggest studcast in history. I don't know about you, but that was totally unexpected by me. I mean, did you expect that?
Oh, yeah, man. Not by me, Dave. You know, I knew as soon as we advertised the fact I was going to do a tribute to my great friend Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah.
It was going to be special. And he was definitely one of the most admired and loved wrestlers. Not only by the wrestlers themselves, but by fans around the world. And even after his controversial run in Florida in the mid-1980s, during what I called his crazy satanic and occult oriented persona as a wrestler and manager, there was still always something special about Kevin and that fans were obviously attracted to.
Unfortunately, living in the Florida panhandle, I was never in that part of Florida that could see the Florida Championship Wrestling TV show. Now, unless I was visiting my uncle down in the Tampa Bay area, maybe, I would have loved to have looked at what he was doing each week during that time period. Did you ever get to really check some of that out?
Basically, because like you, man, I lived in the Florida panhandle too, and even a little further to the west than you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, and, back in those days, about 19 in the mid 80s or early 80s, cable TV hadn't reached its full potential yet at that point. So, but when we started up Continental Championship Wrestling in 1985, Gordon Solick was our commentator for that show, and he had been the Florida TV commentator for, I guess, probably maybe 30 years at that point. Mm-hmm. And he had plenty of Kevin stories for me every Monday when we recorded our Continental TV show, which we did live from Birmingham, Alabama. So luckily, less than 2 years later, Kevin came to work for us in Continental.
Wow. You know, at Dothan, Alabama, for folks that don't know, is in the southeast corner. We're only 20 miles from Georgia, maybe 20 miles too from Florida. So we're located right. We call it the tri-states area. And listen, you talk about Gordon Solie. I remember the first time I saw him come on TV in the Dothan area. I was like, y'all, we have hit the big time, because I knew he was the mainstay down in the Florida territories for wrestling and on TV. He was a wrestling icon, no doubt. And listen, I got to tell you, I loved your Kevin tribute story about him and his New Guinea headhunter team. And I think that's why the podcast last week was so big. About the cage match where an unknown third headhunter hid under the ring for hours. Then during the match, cut his way up through the mat and into the ring. For those that didn't hear it, I highly recommend it. Go back, find Studcast number 361, and listen to the last 15 minutes of it. You can find it at tnstud.com. It's definitely going to be there. You'll find it on YouTube also if you put in Southeastern Rewind. To me, that was just a fantastic tribute to Kevin Sullivan, Stud.
Well, I've been inundated, man, the past week with requests to tell a few more Kevin Sullivan stories. And I think that's what I think I'm going to do in the next Studcast. I'm going to do just that. I don't see any reason why that I or any of his fans should have to let go of his memory so quickly, you know. So I'm going to do a couple of stories in the next Studcast.
That's an excellent idea. I totally agree. It does seem like you're right. It seems like, you know, we pay tribute to someone just for a day or two or maybe a week. And then we sort of let that memory go. So keeping his memory alive is a great way to continue your tribute to Kevin Sullivan. I look forward to it. That'll be fun next week, hearing more of those stories. Okay, so today, where are we going to be riding on this episode number 362?
We're going to begin this one, man, in southeastern Tennessee, at your Hyde Park Amphitheater. And we're going to be talking about this one. It's going to be the first week in August of 1980 in both territories. And we'll talk about the Georgia promoters and the owners, card there, and their continued struggle, I got to say that, to try and make some kind of success out of the old Southeastern Territory. Then we're going to ride into the new Southeastern Territory based in Pensacola, Florida. We'll discuss the card there. That's going to be in all three of the major markets, Montgomery, Mobile, and Dothan, Alabama. We'll also talk about the TV show promoting the card, the results of the matches on that card, the attendances in those three major buildings, and then hopefully we may have some time for a learning tree question. I'd like to see that happen this week.
That's cool. So it sounds like another good one to me. So let's start with that Southeastern Knoxville card. Thursday night, August 7th, I think is the date, 1980. Take us back, Stud.
Okay, before we get into that card, though, Dave, I want to point out something really important that was not in any of the newspaper ads, which appeared, you know, which happened to be the only advertising that the Georgia promoters ran. They didn't do billboards or posters or anything else, and it was about the only thing they did was run an ad in the paper, and that was to promote each one of their weekly their weekly TV shows weren't on those ads. And that was, it was something we always did when I owned the company. In fact, it was a very simple addition to the newspaper ad, and critical, absolutely critical, especially if you didn't advertise in any other way, you really had to put this information in your newspaper ad.
Okay, all right. I can't imagine what that could be, so... what could have been that important, Stud?
Well, they failed to advertise their TV show. And the only other form of advertising they had in the market, was those ads. And my ads, when I was running that company, always had at the bottom of every one of those ads the TV station call letters, the day and the time that the show was on the air.
Well, I mean, that's crazy. That could have been the most important thing in the ad, period.
Yeah, well, you know, it sure was. You know, you were definitely not going to build your audience if new potential fans didn't know that there was a wrestling show on every weekend.
Thank you.
Saw the ad, and they didn't. Yeah. There was no talk about being a wrestling show. They had no idea that he was even there. So it also didn't help you at all if say the general manager of the TV station happened to look at your newspaper ad and see that you weren't advertising his station, especially since the former owner, which was me of the company, had always done that. So because business was way down by this time, you know, they've been struggling since they bought me out in October the year before. And business was down more than 50% from what we had been drawing a year earlier. And it probably meant that along with the business in the buildings being down, that obviously your TV audience is going to be dropping too, maybe also as much as 50%. So imagine when that rating book came in and the general manager of the station saw his biggest audience for a weekend show in the entire market out of all the stations there, from sign off to sign on time, except for prime time, had dropped by 50%.
Wow.
So going from an unbelievable 80 share to maybe he's looking at it and now it's a 40 share, what was potentially going to happen then?
Well, a 40 share in some markets would have been really good, but after that market was, and that TV station was accustomed to an 80 share, that's very disappointing. So having been in those shoes, I know exactly what you're saying. They were in serious trouble. So no wonder they were soon going to be looking for a buyer. You definitely made your point, Stud, as only someone that had created the Southeastern success could have made a point like that. So how about take us to Thursday night, August 7th, the 1980 card for Thursday night, August 7th, and who was on that card?
Well, the newspaper ad showed four matches, and it said there was a fifth match, but it wasn't listed who that match was. In that space where it said there's an extra match, probably could have put in that fifth match. So the first match listed was Ray Candy versus Baron Von Raske. Then Steve Regal was taking on Abdullah the Butcher. In a tag team match, Mr. Wrestling 2 and Stan Hansen were teaming up again to face the Assassins with a champion, but it wasn't even in a title match. They were just having a regular tag match. And the main event was a hold versus hold match. Kevin Sullivan versus Maniac Mark Lewin. And you could only win with your finishing hold, basically, by submission only is about the only way you could win this match. And Kevin Sullivan had to win with a figure four because that was his hold. And Mark Lewin had to win with a sleeper because that was his hold.
Okay, so, I mean, what did you think of the card?
Well, I think even though I can't see who was in that first match, that overall it was loaded with good talent, basically. Ray Candy and Steven Regal were both very good wrestlers. But it was their first time in Knoxville. They'd never been there before, and they were facing two excellent heels. Steven Regal was a great English shooter, and it's hard for me to imagine how he was going to have a match with the brawler like Abdullah the Butcher. So I don't know. It was pretty hard to work with Abdullah. It didn't make any difference who you were and how good you were. So, and then the Wrestling 2 and Assassins angle, you know, this one has made no sense to me since we started talking about it about five studcasts ago. I mean, Wrestling 2 has had three different partners in 3 weeks, and now they're in a return match with Stan Hansen as his partner again. And they had just come out of a cage match the week before, and now they're going to be in a simple tag match, not even for a championship, right? So it kind of seems backwards to me, this whole angle with Ole that put together for Wrestling 2 and the Assassins. And I can only say, what were you thinking, Ole? So, and then the main event was Kevin Sullivan against Mark Lewin in a hold against hold match. Now, that was a new one to me. I'd never heard about this type of match, but I liked the idea. You know, I could see that being a good thing. You know, and I probably would have done one of those myself somewhere if I had seen it back in those days. So the really sad part of this entire event is the fact that I heard it had rained that night, and they ran the matches in the rain. In spite of the rain, they went ahead and had their matches.
Wow.
Now, when they went into the park, I already warned everybody about that chance of raining out. You know, I mean, they had to realize that we're outside in an outside venue, and what's going to happen if it rains?
Yeah.
So I feel sorry for those 12 wrestlers that were living down there in the Atlanta area that drove up from Atlanta to Tennessee and then had to work in the rain.
Okay, so was there a point, maybe lightning would have stopped the matches. Was that like the tipping point to say, all right, we've got to call this off on a situation like that?
Well, you were, you know, having ran some matches there when I had rain, which obviously we ran there every summer.
Yeah.
You know, it was up to me basically to make the decision. Are we going to run or are we not? And obviously, if it was lightning and that type of storm, you wouldn't do it. But, you know, it wasn't going to help your attendance. That's for sure. You know, I heard it was less than 1,000 fans, in fact.
Wow. Wow.
So I shudder to think how bad the matches were, especially with Ole. He was the booker and he wasn't on the card. So, you know, he wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, and he would have been the only person probably able to rally the troops and to save the night. Because when you send these guys out to work in a ring and it's wet, soaking wet, very dangerous to wrestle on a wet mat to begin with. And then it's still raining, you know, nobody in the crowd. I mean, it seemed like everything was headed downhill for these guys. And, and a lot of money, and specifically the enthusiasm of his crew, was lost on that rainy night for sure.
Oh, no doubt. And I feel sorry for the fans. And you can't endanger the fans, especially if there's lightning or something like that. And what are the chances you're going to rebook that event if something happens? And the wrestlers, too, you got to feel that's dangerous. If the mat is wet, as you're saying, because if they're making big moves, somebody could really get hurt, especially if they were coming off the ropes in one way or another. So, I mean, so who had to drive more than 400 miles there and back and wrestle in the rain? Those wrestlers did. So surely things were not going to get better. I mean, wow.
No. Oh, the worst thing was the fact that the payoffs for that small crowd was going to be the worst in Southeastern history. I mean, we never ran a match in which we had a crowd that small in all my years there. And I think after the rain killed the night, but the wrestlers still had to work, I'm sure Jim Barnett and Fred Ward got an earful the next day from the wrestlers about, you know, hey, what the heck is this all about? And I say that because they canceled the remaining dates they had scheduled in Chilhowee Park and went back to the Coliseum the next week. And if the next Coliseum night had been changed back to a Friday, which it was originally about a month or so earlier, always, forever, been a Friday night, if it had changed back to a Friday, I would have expected that maybe some life would get kicked into that company again. But, they didn't even do that. They stayed on Thursday night and went back to the Coliseum. That, to me, was the town killer.
Oh, no doubt. That's wow.
The flip-flopping back and forth from the park and now back to the Coliseum, from the Coliseum to the park, now back to the Coliseum, it was more than enough to hurt the company badly. Continuity and being in your same venue each week was critical to success. So you felt sorry, Dave, for the fans and the wrestlers, you know, and I felt sorry for Les Thatcher, of all people, man, because he had worked so hard for years with me to help build the best small territory in the world. And now he was every week watching it die, and he couldn't do anything about it. He didn't own anything. He was just doing his job.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was very depressed.
Wow. I mean, and I've been a part of situations like that where you build something and you really make it good, like what you guys had done. And I'm sure you would say it was a team effort. It wasn't just totally you, but, and then then you step aside from that and watch it just die on the vine. So when, and listen, I tell you, when you break things down like this, Ron, we can all see why everyone involved had to be disappointed, depressed, and as low as it comes, and why the new Southeastern owners were failing. I can only imagine what Les Thatcher was feeling, and maybe we could change the atmosphere by riding south. You want to do that? Let's talk about Southeastern Gulf Coast and that card, which I got a feeling was on fire in comparison. Let's go to the first week in August of 1980.
Well, instead of the five-match card like Tennessee had had that we just discussed, we were going back to a seven-match card on the Gulf Coast down there. So we had had seven-match card for about 3 weeks, sold out every town. And, you know, and now we went back to a six-match card. We went back to seven again. So the opening match was a new heel that had just come into territory, a guy called Tom Stanton, and he was wrestling against Charlie Cook. Tony Choss was facing off against the Masked Avenger. Ricky Gibson was wrestling Sweet Brown Sugar. Both of those guys were great. There were four main events on this card. The first one was for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship. Norvell Austin, who had won the last three-man match the week before to see who was going to get to wrestle for the United States Junior title, and he was obviously going to be facing the champion, Jerry Stubbs. For the Southeastern Tag Belts, Rob and I were getting a chance to win back our belts that we had lost on television the week before from the new champions, Ron Bass, Randy Rose, banished by the Big C. And then in a special notice qualification match, Joe LeDuc was going up against Plowboy Frazier, man. Talk about two big dudes in the ring. And Plowboy was seconded by his good buddy Floyd, as always. And then in the fourth main event, it was a return match for the Southeastern Championship with Bob Armstrong. He had lost the belt the week before, having an opportunity to win the belt back. It was customary to get a return match. And he was wrestling against, obviously, the Mongolian Stomper, and he was managed by the Big C.
All right, obviously, that's a really fantastic card. And back to seven matches again. Three, if I got all this right, three championship matches and a special no disqualification match with the two biggest wrestlers in the territory, Joe LeDuc and Plowboy Frazier, facing each other for only the second time. So who and what was on the TV show that set up and promoted this incredible card?
Well, this TV show opened in a very unusual way. It opened up with the last 3 minutes of the last TV show the week before, which was a Southeastern Tag Championship match between Rob and I, defending our belts against Ron Bass and Randy Rose, managed by the Big C. And so obviously, as soon as they popped into this, Charlie didn't even show up. It came right out of the open with the music and the introduction, right straight into the last 3 minutes of this tag match from the week before. And the crowd was in studio was going crazy. And the match had been changed in the personality profile. When Big C had challenged us, we were going to just have a regular championship match. Big C wanted to have a tornado tag match with all four men in the ring. And then he wanted to say, let's let the pin fall take place anywhere in the studio. And that's what we agreed to on this particular match. So the match was obviously joined in progress. As Robert, when it started this piece of video, this 3 minutes of video, there was Rob on the studio floor. He was in a full Nelson, Randy Rose. Big C loaded his glove. When he went to hit Rob, Rob ducked, and he hit Rose. And then Robert went after Big C, got him on the concrete floor right outside the Hills dressing room, and they started nailing him, and all of a sudden, Mongolian Stomper came flying out of the dressing room, kicked Rob in the back of the head. He put Randy Rose on top of him and drug Big C back into the dressing room. And Ron Bass and I were in the ring during all this, and so was the referee. He had been with us, trying to separate us. So the referee never saw any of what had happened outside the ring. He did, however, though, see Randy Rose on top of my brother, went down to on the floor, and he counted Rob out on the concrete just outside the Heels dressing room. So the referee finished the count, and he raised Randy Rose's hand, who was still basically unconscious. He just raised his hand and dropped straight back down. Well, Ron Bass got out of the ring. He went straight to the set where Charlie was. He grabbed the Southeastern tag belts, and just as the show was going off the air, going to black. And so the current TV studio reacted to this video here just like they'd been there the week before, man, and with a loud roar of boos because obviously it's a different way to start a show, that's for sure.
Well, it's a great way to start a show, absolutely, using the last 3 minutes of the preceding show with all that action. So what was Charlie Platt doing all this time?
Well, Charlie Platt had sat there and waited on the end of it to take place, and then he spoke his first words on this show. As the last week's TV show went to black, he started out, and he welcomed fans to the current show, and he explained that what the fans had just witnessed was Ron Bass and Randy Rose winning the Southeastern Tag Championship. And his guests today were going to be on the personality profile were going to be my brother and I. And then he threw it straight to the announcer in the ring for the introduction to the first match.
All right. And what about that first TV match, Stud? Who was in that?
Well, the new tag champions, Ron Bass and Randy Rose. They had their manager, Big C, with them, and the first two outbursts from the studio crowd were minimal compared to this nasty reception that they gave the champions live, you know. And this time, when they came out of the dressing room, it was Rob and I. We were watching the monitor in our dressing room, and we were shocked, man, to see and hear just how much heat the three of those guys had gotten from the week before. And they quickly added to it by totally destroying their opponents in this first TV match. And they finished him off, in fact, with Ron Bass using his Texas Stampede on one of them. And Randy Rose just about took a guy's head off coming off the ropes with one of those brutal clotheslines that he was pretty good at across the throat. And I tell you, their heat went up a notch. I thought they had some good heat, but it went up a notch for sure in that match.
This TV show was off to a tremendous start, and this is a great place to take a break. So let's do that. And when we come back, we're going to find out what other stars were on this TV show. That's coming up when this Studcast, number 362, Southeastern Sailing, Tennessee Turmoil, when this Studcast continues right here. Hey, Studcast fans, Ron asked me to thank every one of you for your continued support. He was blown away by the response to the last Studcast and very pleased to see how many of his fans were also fans of his close friend, Kevin Sullivan. He wanted me to remind you that he will be following up on the next Studcast with more on Kevin. Few wrestlers in history have impacted the sport as much as Kevin Sullivan. You can hear the respect he had for him in every conversation. I look forward to hearing more about one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, Kevin Sullivan. Next week, more history right here on the Studcast. All right, Studcast fans, welcome back. Another Studcast, and we're underway with, I think, a really good one. And, Ron, let's go straight to the next segment on the TV show. You've got us down south in Southeastern Gulf Coast. Why don't you carry on with that?
Okay, we had two very good junior heavyweight wrestlers in the next one, man. And one of them had a ton of heat, the United States junior heavyweight champion, Jerry Stubbs. He was in his sixth week undefeated as the United States junior heavyweight champion. He was at the set with Charlie, and his opponent for the next week for this card that we're talking about was Norvell Austin, and he was going to be the guy in the ring. And he was about to get his second shot, Norvell, at Jerry Stubbs and his junior heavyweight championship belt. And Stubbs, as always, was confident, as you know, in fact, cocky was probably a better word. And he said he was looking forward to his next title defense, but even more so, he said he was looking forward to the arrival of the world junior heavyweight champion, which was going to be in that southeastern territory 2 weeks later. And he said that he was sure if he held on to the United States belt that he would be the southeastern wrestler that was going to receive that world title shot at the champion, Les Thornton, who was from Manchester, United Kingdom, not too far from where Tony Charles was from. So all five the junior heavyweight wrestlers in southeastern were looking ahead to Thornton's arrival. And obviously, they realized that the United States junior champion was going to get the shot. And that's the way it should have been. So Norvell Austin was no exception to that. And he showed just how determined he was at getting the belt, man, and getting that shot at the world title. And he picked things up a notch, man. When he looked over toward the set, I guess, and he had plenty of time because the guy he was wrestling was on the mat all the time. And so he saw Tony Charles come to the set with Jerry Stubbs. And so Charles confronted Stubbs. And, you know, and so he was saying, he told Stubbs that he had never gotten a return match for his United States Junior Championship that he lost 6 weeks ago to him. And since he had lost that, Stubbs had defended against three other guys. But, you know, he basically said, it's my turn. It's my time, right? So he also said, you know, that he said, you don't know anything about Les Thornton, which was true. I mean, I'm sure Stubbs had never seen him at this point. He said, but I beat him twice, you know, already in my career. So, you know, he's letting Stubbs know that, you know, it's my time to get a shot. Well, it was Norvell's shot. Right. Norvell was booked against him for the next week. And Norvell could see something was brewing over there at the set, man. So he jerked his opponent up and threw him in the ropes and hit him one of those diving headbutts. And then he rolled out on the floor and he went to the set. And now the three of them got to pushing and shoving and they were threatening each other. And Charlie could see, man, he wasn't going to be able to control this. And Charlie was always sharp about the situation, handling the situation, and he closed out the segment. And he left the set, just got up and left the set. And they let him do whatever's going to happen.
All right, so this upcoming World Junior title match was going to be something really special. I remember seeing Les Thornton in action. Didn't Charlie mention something at the beginning of the show about you and Robert being on the personality profile?
Yeah. Yep, and he did, and that's where we were, and that's where we are at this point. We're at the personality profile, and we had basically they opened the show and showed how we got robbed of the belts in the first 3 minutes of the show, and obviously it showed how we were robbed of the belts, and basically it was the Big C and the Mongolian Stomper that beat us. It wasn't the two guys that we were wrestling in the ring. And we had earned a return match for the tag belts. Obviously, when you lost the belt, you got an instant return match usually. And we had no idea of the last minute special stipulation that was added to the match, and neither did Charlie. And he asked the director to run the video, which was shot earlier in that day. We did another cutaway from Rob and I after we talked a little bit to Charlie. He cut away. He said, let's see what Big C, Ron Bass, Randy Rose, Mongolian Stomper have to say about this profile and you guys. So Bass and Rose, they were wearing our southeastern belts. Stomper was wearing Bob Armstrong's southeastern belt that he had just won. And Big C was having himself a great day. He was the proud owner of all the southeastern belts. And he was laughing about how we lost ours in the tag match that everybody saw in the opening of the TV show, and how he and the Stomper personally cost us our precious tag team belts. And then he asked if, he said, I don't know if you guys are aware that in this upcoming return championship tag match, that it's going to be one of those new last shot at the belt matches. Same kind of match, he said, the Stomper won last week against Bob Armstrong. If he had lost, he wasn't going to get to Russell Armstrong again for the title. He beat him. He had two, and he beat him. He got the job done. And then he said that if you crybabies lose this next Southeastern Championship match against my new champions, he goes, they'll never have to defend against you again for those belts. As long as they keep them, you'll never get another shot. So all four of them, they instantly broke up laughing, man. And they didn't stop before the video ended. They went off with them laughing like crazy. So when the cameras returned to us, Charlie asked if we were aware of this special in stipulation. And we weren't, you know. And so I went a little ballistic, man. You know, I said, hey, after the way we were robbed of our belts by the Mongolian Stomper and Big C, how could anybody say that this was going to be a last shot match? Said, we haven't even had a return match yet. And so that means if we don't win this return match, then we are never going to get another match with these guys, with these champions. So Rob was as upset as I was, and then he just looked at me and he said, you know, maybe we should do something about this, Ron, right now. And I kind of got the same idea as him, that we ought to go to the dressing room over there and pull their butts out and see what we can do to them. And so Charlie could see how upset we were. And we got up and headed to the Heels dressing room across the studio, straight across the studio from where the set was. And Charlie yelled for Bob and Joe LeDuc, hey, guys, get out here. Got to stop this. So Big C was watching. And the monitor, every one of those, the dressing rooms, both of them had a monitor. You could see what was going on. And he saw us coming. He just locked the door. So Bob and Joe and a couple of other guys, they pulled us away from the dressing room door. We pounded on it a little bit, but we weren't going to get in there. And so Charlie quickly closed the profile. I mean, what's he going to say after all that? He shut it down.
Well, there goes another crazy personality profile. All right, so what was next?
Joe LeDuc and the studio crowd, they exploded, man, with this next one. Plowboy Frazier was Joe's next opponent. Came outside the dressing room door, and he stood there, and he watched the match with Joe LeDuc. And, wow, Joe was over big, big time. And he stood there, Plowboy stood there, and watched, and Joe LeDuc put his bear hug on the guy that he was wrestling at the end of it. The poor soul, I guess is a good way of putting anybody that LeDuc had a bear hug on was in trouble. And when LeDuc dropped his opponent, and the guy gave up, Joe just motioned for Plowboy to come on in the ring. He was standing there, watched the whole match, right? And he didn't hesitate, but he immediately disappeared. He didn't go toward the ring. He went back in the dressing room about as fast as he could.
Well, I, you know what? I don't blame him. Joe LeDuc was a scary, gigantic human being. So who finished out this TV show?
Well, Bob Armstrong popped in the studio again, you know, and then when he joined Charlie at the set, they watched the video of his recent loss of the Southeastern title to Mongolian Stomper. And like I said earlier, it was one of those last shot championship matches for the Stomper. And the Big C won it, basically for his Mongol. He knocked Bob unconscious when the referee was down and didn't see it with his loaded glove. And that's how Stomper got his title back, or he got the Southeastern belt back.
Okay, so how about the last match?
Well, the new Southeastern champion, Mongolian Stomper, was in that one, and I bet you know where he was headed, Dave.
So I have a pretty good idea. Hopefully no fans were going to be injured in the process. These rampages by the Stomper up into the studio bleachers, to me, watching it from home was really funny, and watching the fans was quite a reaction, too. So, but the fan safety, you know, you kind of worried about that a little bit too, almost as much as the Stomper himself. You know, that was pretty frightening.
Yeah, it definitely was. And as many times as I ever wrestled him, it was always a little frightening just looking across the ring at him. So, but he didn't get to do that, you know, like he normally did anyway. You know, normally he would have gone over there and he would have emptied both of those bleachers. But Bob Armstrong was at the set and he went to help his friends. And Stomper saw him coming and he headed for the ring, man. He didn't want to tackle. Didn't want to try Bob right at that point in time. So then Bob just sat down on the bleachers and started motioning for the fans to come on back in the studio. He sat there and watched the Stomper's match, you know, while the Stomper annihilated his opponent. He sat there and protected his fans.
It was amazing watching from home how the fans would just leave the studio so quickly because the Stomper was coming. But obviously that didn't happen this time. Another tremendous TV show. So what happened in the arenas as you take us to the three major markets?
Well, Charlie Cook and newcomer Tom Stanton, they wrestled to a 20-minute time limit draw, which said a lot about this new guy, Tom Stanton. I had never seen him wrestle, and wow, Charlie couldn't beat him in 20 minutes, and I was impressed. Charlie Cook was a great wrestler. Tony Charles beat the Avenger. Ricky Gibson and Sweet Brown Sugar, they wrestled to a fantastic 30-minute time limit draw. And it was good enough, man. I said, we got to book that. We got to push that 30 minutes to 60. So they were going to come back the next week and wrestle each other in a 60-minute, one-hour time limit draw. And I don't know that was going to end up in a draw, but they were going to get the shot at the 60-minute. Jerry Stubbs won his United States Junior Heavyweight match over Norvell Austin, and he was one win away from the shot at Les Thorne's World Junior Heavyweight belt. Joe LeDuc won his match against Plowboy Frazier in the Southeastern Tag Championship last shot match. Just like it had taken four wrestlers to steal the belts from us on the TV show to begin this TV that we just talked about. It took the same number, four guys, to beat us in this last chance match too. And basically, it was the same two guys, Big C and Mongolian Stomper, got involved. And it was a wild deal, but we ended up losing this last shot match, which meant that we weren't going to get a shot at Ron Bass and Randy Rose, the new Southeastern belts.
All right, and who caused you two to lose?
Well, like I just mentioned, I guess Stomper and Big C, and then let's just go on into the last match, which was the Southeastern Championship match. We'd had all this problem with them; we'd just lost, and Bob had the Stomper. Bob's wrestling against the Stomper, and this match was really crazy. Bob had the Stomper beat, and the Big C got involved. Bob took care of the Big C. He had the Stomper down. Ron Bass got in the ring. That brought Joe LeDuc came down because Bob was at that point in the ring with three guys. Joe came down to help Bob. Randy Rose went to the ring. Rob and I, we were happy to go back to the ring. I wanted to get my hands on a couple of those guys. And we got there, me and Rob were able to pair off with the Big C and the Stomper. I pile drive Stomper twice, and Rob pile drive Big C twice, and those two had to be carried out on stretchers. So it was one of the wildest finishes in Southeastern history, that match.
All right, that's a great night of wrestling. How about the attendances in the three major cities?
Montgomery and Dothan were both just under 5,000 fans, and Mobile had its regular 5,600 sellout, and it turned away some fans, not as much as had been 2 or 3 weeks earlier, but it still turned away people that couldn't get in.
All right, this has been a very interesting ride today, and I am happy to announce it's not over. We are going to have enough time, so let's get to it. A learning tree question for this episode. And this one comes from Canada. Our friends up north, Randall Albertini from Ottawa, Canada, says, today, Some wrestlers treat matches as a shoot and will refuse to lose or demand outside interference to explain their loss. What would wrestlers back in your day do if somebody refused to lose?
That's a very interesting question, Mr. Albertini. Obviously, there's literally a world of difference in the sport today and what it was like back in my day. We're not talking about the same two animals here. And back in my day, you didn't end up in a dressing room anywhere in the world and be stupid enough to refuse to lose. I mean, that was just it was a no-no. And there may have been times, when I questioned whether it made any sense for me to lose to some particular guys, but you never said it. No matter what you look like and size-wise compared to them or whatever else, it was just something that was not done back in the day. And because it was strictly business. And if you didn't want to do business and you didn't want to lose, you needed to find another way to make a living. And if you wanted to be a shooter, well, you could go find the snake pit, like the one I spent some time in Tampa in my first year or two. And today, you can go get in the UFC if you really want to shoot, and if you were a booker like I ended up being, you didn't have time for any of that crap. Somebody coming and saying, man, I don't want to be, I'm not going to let this guy beat me. So it was pretty easy. If you had a guy that didn't want to lose, to find the guy in the dressing room you didn't mind who didn't mind changing that guy's mind. There were some bad dudes there. If you wouldn't have wanted to, you could go say, okay, I'm going to put you with so-and-so over there instead of the guy you don't want to lose to. And so you could always tell when two guys were going to go at it, too. If something happened, it seemed like a lot of times guys knew what was going on in the dressing room that you didn't think they were paying any attention. But if you had a situation like that, and I've seen that a few times where guys didn't want to do business, and they went to the ring. So when that happened, it was one of the only times that you ever saw all the wrestlers in both the dressing rooms come out to watch a match because they were going to see something that they had no idea what it was going to turn into. So, So I can't imagine anybody in today's wrestling, and I have over the last few years, since I've retired, gone to a lot of some events that you don't see 100 people in the building. Right. And I can't imagine how anybody in today's wrestling, if you only had 100 people in the building, why do you care whether you win or lose, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's nobody that cares, right? Or the building would be full, right? So, I'm embarrassed for these wrestlers today, when to see them go out there and wrestle in front of that smaller crowd. Back in my day, you would have gave the money back and you sent the people home, So thanks for your question, Mr. Albertini, and I hope I've answered it to your satisfaction.
Yeah, you're not going to embarrass me in front of 113 people. That's just, I'm not going to let that happen. Another great answer, Stud. That was a fun one, too. And another historic Studcast is in the books. So where are we going to be riding next week?
I'm going to tell a couple of more stories, like I mentioned earlier, about my days with Kevin Sullivan, basically to keep his memory alive a little longer. And I'm also going to ride back into Birmingham as we're getting closer at this point to the opening of another great southeastern city, a great wrestling city. Birmingham has always been a great wrestling city, but it at this point it died. Because it was run by Nick Gulas and his territory was dead, and it had been dead for basically 2 or 3 years. And so, we were going to have to build Birmingham back again. So we'll talk a little bit next time about the first time that I ever placed my wrestling television show on two stations in the same market. And I'm going to do that in Birmingham because I think the city that was in such bad shape, it was going to need a lot of help to be able to. I didn't want to go back and have one of those 100 people crowd that I just mentioned in the back in just a second ago, you know. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to a sellout. I wanted to leave those TVs in there in that city and come back opening night to a monster sellout. So we're going to be back in Tennessee to see their next card, and we'll be finding out about if there's anything positive was happening there as they kept struggling along down there up there in Tennessee to try to get things right. Then we're going to head south, the southeastern Gulf Coast next week, and where the crews are getting even stronger and the cards were getting even better. Hard to imagine, but it was all happening. And we're going to discuss the TV show. We'll talk about the match results and the attendances, and hopefully we'll have enough time for another learning tree again, man.
Hey, you've done it again, Stud. You've given us a history lesson. I mean, some really good stuff of all kinds. I can't wait for more Kevin Sullivan stories, and I'm happy to see you want to keep his memory alive, and I think that's the way it should be. I'm also looking forward to learning more about the world junior heavyweight champion, Les Thornton. I don't think many territories used junior heavyweights like you guys did and really turned them into main eventers. I think that is so cool. Hey, folks, you know how to get up with our buddy Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. You can find him at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like, follow him there. Automatically become friends with the legend on Facebook. I should have said on Facebook. All right, so you can do that easily. Twitter or X, he's at Ron Fuller Welch, and follow him there also. Check out the fantastic website, tnstud.com. You can spend hours and hours there. This studcast is going to be there. Every studcast ever done is going to be there, too. And we're talking, this is number 362, all 1 hour long or even more. Plus, the stud store, you can get 43 super studcasts, 4 different 8x10 photos, the best-selling novel called Brutus, personally autographed to you, all at tnstud.com. And you can subscribe to the YouTube channel, Southeastern Rewind. Find hundreds of hours of classic old-school wrestling entertainment, 436 total videos, the last 139 studcast, Ask the Stud shows, and Short Rides with the Stud. All of that you'll find on YouTube, Southeastern Rewind. It's the first thing that comes up when you put Southeastern in. Go back 1 year or more, discover fantastic stud stories, worldwide stars, studcast archive stories, tell me more fan question shows, superstars of the past shows, and so much more. YouTube, Southeastern Rewind. It is the best deal in wrestling. You can spend hours and hours there as well. All right. Any final words today, Ron?
Yeah, I want to thank the world, man, for their support last week. Wow, it was just truly amazing watching the numbers just explode. And I think it had a lot to do with Kevin Sullivan's tribute. And I just want to thank fans for their support. And basically, I think I got the greatest fans in the world, Dave. And please, everybody out there, take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
It is so rewarding to even around town in the Dothan, Alabama area, folks come up and go, hey, I love the Studcast. I listen to you guys every week. So I want to say thanks also. All right, folks, for Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
1, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.